We are doing this every Tuesday. They need to come hang out with Mooch and the missus.
That is called fascism. Okay, he is a fascist leader.
He's his own worst enemy. He's creating his own problems. You know, he's like one of those people who can't get out of their own way.
I don't want to be one of those Trump haters. Okay, I just want to make...
Everyone is a product of their upbringing and their personal loyalties. I'm a human being, and I probably got overtaken by the excitement of him winning.
The minute you called me to say, boom, as soon as I got that, boom, I called you right back.
Anyway, you lose the argument. All the ladies out there...
My mother's like, why are you cursing so much? I'm like, Ma... Where do you think I learned it from?
We do this podcast. I go into the city. We have dinners together or we'll travel. We spend time to be together as a couple and a family and as business partners. And I feel like it really helps us.
You still love me?
I do.
Okay.
Do you still love me?
Very much.
Okay. I don't know if you have, I mean, let's
very much
go
my
there.
Liberal, hot wife.
Our guest this week thinks we're nuts after that intro.
Okay. Neil, I'm just pointing out to you, Neil, that it's like universal. The listeners feel like the introduction is like a hard fingernails scraping against the blackboard. Everybody's in the third grade because that's actually where the music's from, the third grade, and it's scraping the blackboard. But
it's like Tiny Toons.
We'll leave it at that.
Very frightened puppies.
I wasn't on the right podcast.
Right, exactly.
Because it was so long. I thought maybe this doesn't match the title.
All right, so see, even an Ohio farmer. This guy is right out of Central Casting, ladies and gentlemen, okay? He's from Western Ohio, built himself up from scratch. He's an Ohio farmer. Everybody say hello to Christopher Gibbs.
Christopher Gibbs.
Who, Lord Jesus bless you, okay, is running against the representative, the GOP representative, Jim, the wrestler, Jordan, without his coat. I think he lost his coat somewhere. Great.
Did you ever notice that he doesn't wear a jacket?
No, he doesn't wear a jacket.
What's up with that?
Who knows? Yeah. You know, but you know, just to be clear, we're in an exploratory phase right at the moment for this.
And you're not sure the intent is to move forward.
Okay. The intent is to move forward, but we want to be data driven.
Okay.
And we want to not decide if we're going to run. We want to determine how we're going to run.
Okay.
And that's what we're doing right now.
So before this podcast started, you and I were sitting on a couple couches and you were recanting some.
You guys kept moving couches?
We're in the other room. And we were recanting a little bit of your life and where we are now and where we are as it relates to the Republic right now. So can we go back there?
Back in time.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about your life.
Yeah, I'm a farmer from Ohio. We started from scratch in 1983, but didn't start out that way. I didn't grow up on a farm. My mom and dad lived in town with me. I'm an only child. And my mom and dad are blue-collar laborers. They moved me to the farm when I was 14 years old. And that's where I knew I wanted to be. And so went to the Ohio State University. Studied agronomy. Yeah, go Bucks. Go Bucks.
Yep.
Studied agronomy. Came out of there. I met my wife, Debbie, there. And we started from scratch in 1983 with $2,500, a two-year-old daughter, and a pickup truck.
Oh, wow.
And started farming. That was a tough time, certainly. Ended up getting in the management program with USDA and spent 30 years administering federal farm programs to farmers directly across the counter.
So that was like a desk job?
No, a desk job, I guess. Inside. You know, when I first went into management program, it was funny because I'd never been inside before.
Right.
I'd never had somewhere where I was going to be trapped inside an office for 8 hours.
Right.
And I remember walking up to the first intern office that I was supposed to go into, and I looked at it, and my knees froze.
Like it was like a jail cell.
Oh, my God,
right?
I'm going to be inside all day.
Mm-hmm.
So it was crazy. So 30 years there. 20 years on the Republican Central Committee, grew up in a Republican household. And Anthony, we can talk about that later whenever you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But so that's me.
All right. Well,
what? What excuse are you going to make now? Go.
I mean, she has a good aura, though. I'm meeting her for the first time.
Yeah.
She has a very good aura, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she has a tendency to go nuts on me on certain things. So
no,
fine.
I mean, I'm trying to focus. That's all.
I'm focused. Okay. Could it be more focused? I'm like laser focused. So,
okay.
So, you worked on the Bush campaign, Jeb Bush. Mm-hmm. No, right?
Well, I did work on the campaign. I was chair of the party at the time.
Chair of the party.
Yeah.
Okay.
I spent 7 years as chair between 2007 and 2014.
This is the county party,
county
the state party,
party
county
yeah.
party.
Republican county, county party, party, Shelby County, Ohio.
Okay.
Kind of found myself out of step about 2014.
Right.
And stepped down as chair.
Yeah.
Didn't take the reelection for that. Stayed on the central committee.
Right.
But I was out of step on immigration. Primarily,
right.
Where I'm a moderate on immigration. I believe we need immigration reform. And I also believe that we had our best chance of getting that with the Gang of Eight when Marco Rubio and,
sure. And that
John
was a
McCain.
Very moderate immigration.
Yeah, and by,
package,
the way,
by the way,
all of the all of what people want on a wish list, whether it's Republican or Democrat, now was in that bill.
Mm-hmm.
All of the above, all of the above border security mm-hmm. was there. So I find myself out of step where you've got Steve King out of Iowa and you've got Ann Coulter
right.
being just far right and shrill
right.
about immigrants and attacking people's internal biases. We call it right. confirmation bias, where an individual says, oh, yeah, those other people,
mm-hmm. right.
those folks with brown skin, et cetera,
right.
which excites in a person's mind just the worst of
yes.
us. It brings right. out the worst of us. And I said, that's just not me. That's not the Republican Party that I grew up in. I grew up in the Republican Party of Reagan and Bush, where we talked about diplomacy and statesmanship and American exceptionalism
mm-hmm.
and compassionate conservatism. And I didn't grow up in this populist movement that we've ended up with.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to actually 2018. The president starts putting tariffs on on products coming from other countries, which resulted in retaliation
mm-hmm.
to agriculture. You know, those countries came right after our soft underbelly in the United States, and that's agriculture. They came right after it. And it was predictable. And for the administration to, they either didn't know that was going to happen, or they didn't care. Both of them are just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I started speaking out about that. You know, as a farmer, I'm looking at this, I said, this is going to hurt us long term. These tariffs are going to hurt us long term because we've built these markets. Agriculture built these markets over decades. We went out and we went to China. We did NAFTA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is going to hurt us long term. And I wrote this piece for my local paper, and I started out with a riddle. I said, let me tell you a riddle. I went to bed with President Trump because he said he loved me. When I got up in the morning, I realized all I got was screwed.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to tell the world about it, he offered me money. Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I ended up with the riddle
Daniels.
Like this. I said, I'm not anybody named Stormy. I'm the American farmer.
Mm-hmm.
That set off a firestorm against me from agriculture, from the far right, that I was what we have now in the populist Trumplican party, and it's this, that it's binary. You have one choice. If you disagree, you're a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's what we've ended up in this populist movement, both sides. You know, populism has infected our American politics
mm-hmm.
on both sides, on the far left and the far right.
Mm-hmm.
And I define populism like this. Populism is nothing more than a perennial search to find a villain to slay, with never a plan of what to do with the body.
Mm-hmm.
Perennial search for a villain to slay. And what's the example to that? Let's start with the far left. On the far left, who's the villain to slay? It's anybody that you perceive that has more than you do. because obviously they cheated to get it. I'm being very facetious.
Right, of course.
Obviously they cheated to get it. Obviously they don't deserve it. Obviously they stepped on labor or somebody else to get there. And obviously they need to give 75% of it away. Okay? Perennial search for a villain to slay with never a plan of what to do with the body. What are they going to do when they've torn down all of the job creators, when they've torn down all of the people that are creating capital and wealth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are they going to do? No plan. Mm-hmm. On the right, it's much more insidious. Perennial search for a villain to slay. Who's the villain? Anybody that disagrees with you. Our institutions, the FBI, the intelligence community, our traditional trading partners, Mexico, Canada, Australia, Japan, the EU, immigrants, people with brown skin,
mm-hmm.
asylum seekers, they, all of those are villains.
So why are they able to do that then? So it's just it's a grieved group of people in the country, and they decided that they're going to accept that part and parcel? Is that an expression of their anger? We never
want to get into a situation where we're blaming folks for either supporting the president, supporting the Trump presidency, or supporting the far left. That's a non-starter. President Trump is not the cause of this. He's a symptom.
I agree with that.
Of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have to realize how populism crept in. Let's start with the left again. Okay. As wealth distribution started to change and started to concentrate at higher levels, and others felt like that they weren't participating, that sparks the Elizabeth Warren type populism. Okay. It started the Bernie Sanders populism that you know, corporate America is capturing all the dollars.
Mm-hmm.
On the right, it's populism started to creep in, actually, through the Tea Party. The Tea Party used to be, but it's now, that's where populism started, that people thought they weren't being heard by their legislators. And they blamed George Bush for that, et cetera. And they can say, well, we weren't being listened to. We've been screaming out all this time. And eventually, somebody came along that confirmed all of our own internal biases,
mm-hmm.
confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump walked in and confirmed all of the biases on the right that people just generally hold as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Is it enough people, though, Chris, for him to win again? Is he going to win Ohio? So goes Ohio, goes the nation, apparently.
I think it's tenuous. And here's why. And this is why I'm contemplating. This is why I'm laying the groundwork for a run against his, we'll call it his lead attack dog, which is Jim Jordan.
I'm rolling my eyes. Nobody can hear it, but I am.
Mm-hmm. Is that people are just tired. Literally tired, mentally tired, and physically tired of the discourse. Because these parties are divided into two fortresses. They're not parties anymore. They're
mm-hmm.
fortresses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just lobbing bombs from one side to the other. And the rest of us are caught in the middle with the shrapnel just falling down upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And what I believe, and it's in my gut, is that there are people that are, they're always going to stay in those fortresses, the far right, far left. They're always going to stay there. But there are others that are just outside the wall, and they're looking for a path. They're looking for a way to just get out of the morass, to just get out of, just make it stop.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it stop. Let's get back to legislation. Let's get back to doing things in a consensus mode for people.
Right.
And Jim Jordan was a wrestler, okay? Legislating is not wrestling. It's not making a pin, getting a point on the board, going to your local or your most favorite infotainment channel and fomenting the audience. What it is, it's building trust. It's reaching across the aisle. It's building relationships, finding consensus, which is hard to find. Mm-hmm. I didn't say you had to compromise your moorings, but it's finding consensus. And what's the final straw?
But do these
getting
people,
to 218 votes.
No, I get it, but do these people want to find consensus anymore? It seems like they just want to destroy each other. There's been no legislation passed in that Congress of any meaningful significance in 2 years.
My gut is that, and that's why I start out with people are just tired and wore out. Listen, the populist movement, I agree. I understand it. I hear you. Has there been an inordinate concentration of wealth in the country where others felt like they were disaffected?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely agree with that. Were political leaders not listening on the right when the Midwest was inundated with your religion is out of step? Your beliefs are out of step. They're not woke enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Your boys and girls should share the same bathroom. All of this stuff that attacks Midwestern moorings and values, and no one was defending against it. So I get it. I understand populism,
right,
and I do
we
not
have to
blame.
Like, move on and
that's,
figure
that's
out.
That's the
right.
point. It's
like,
it's time. To
we define
stop.
The problem.
We got to stop.
Right, right.
Okay, we've had our say. We're mm-hmm. populist. We've had our say.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
We hear you.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you want?
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to be listened to. You wanted labor to have a voice at the table. You wanted equality. You wanted more fairness. We're in. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, so you're saying it's tenuous that he could lose Ohio, or you think he's going to win Ohio?
But I'm not going to say. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, excuse me, Wisconsin, Michigan, Western Pennsylvania, Ohio. Those are your
right.
Those are your four that right. you kind of use as a benchmark. He could lose all three of those and probably be even in Ohio. All right. Now, Ohio just elected all state legislature, or excuse me, statewide offices from the governor on down, but they're all moderates.
Well, that's a good thing.
Even the governor, he's a Republican.
You know, Mike DeWine's great. He's great.
He's a Republican.
He's a solution-based governor.
Right.
And remember what I told you before when we were sitting on a couch before we started the podcast is that, and this is when I was Republican Party or chair is what I was trying to put in locally is if you put in good Republicans that are interested in good governance, politics takes care of itself. But you
right.
can never put in a political figure and expect good governance out
mm-hmm.
of them. That's a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But if you put in, and so Mike DeWine speaks to that. He's a good governor, but he's interested in solutions. He isn't hamstrung to ideology.
Right.
And that's what we have in the Congress now. Well, I don't know what we have in the Congress now because they've ceded their constitutional responsibility to be a separate
yes,
and
have.
Equal branch, not only to the White House, they've ceded it to a man,
mm-hmm.
one individual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's just emphasize that because I think it's very important. You have a check and balance system. There's been evidence that's absolutely overwhelming that the president broke the law. There's a group of people at Fox News that are doing mental gymnastics to suggest otherwise. literally, it's like watching the Peggy Flemings or the Dorothy Hamels of mental figure skating. They're doing pirouettes and twists, trying to tell you that he didn't do something that he did. And the evidence is overwhelming. And by the way, just for people that love Trump that are listening, if the evidence was irrefutable for the president, he would let Mick Mulvaney and he would let Mike Pompeo and John Bolton testify. He would also let Rudy Giuliani testify under oath in the Congress. But he will not do that because if he does that, I predict if there are four Republicans break, if it's Romney, Collins, et cetera, if they break, Trump leaves because he will not be able to stand the heat of that sort of testimony publicly in the Senate. He'll have to resign. So these guys are unbelievable to me in terms of how they've fancied out on the country. So now what you're basically saying is we have a check and balance system in place, and we have a group of partisans on the Republican Party that have actually ceded their constitutional obligation to that check and balance to an individual. Why? Why do they do that?
You said broke the law. We haven't had the trial yet. Okay. Broke the law is completely different than what Madison talked about in, or Hamilton, excuse me, Hamilton talked about in what was Hamilton 65. He talked about laid out impeachment and said, number one, it's a political process, high crimes and misdemeanors. But he also said violations of the public trust. That's where I'm hooked. I'm hooked at violations of public trust. Me, broke the law. I don't know. We haven't heard the trial yet. Okay. All we've done violations
of
the public
talking,
trust.
Fox News talking point is that he quote unquote didn't break the law.
Doesn't make a difference.
Though, which he did.
Doesn't make a
right.
damn
right.
bit of difference.
Point, right?
Because Hamilton laid it out perfectly. He said violations of public trust is under high crimes and misdemeanors.
Right.
Because what the others would try to fomate you into believing is that there had to be a crime, okay? Let me put it something more specific. If the crime never occurred, then are we going to let everybody that performed attempted robbery, attempted kidnapping, attempted XYZ, mm-hmm. are we going to let them out of prison mm-hmm. now?
Mm-hmm.
You can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. So a violation of the public trust under Hamilton, which laid this out just right, appears to have occurred. Okay, and the Senate's going to have to decide that. If you go to another country and you ask for their help to advance your own political ambitions, at the very least, it's a violation of public trust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And individuals need to stand up. Elected leaders need to stand up and say that.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, so we're here now. You are a Midwesterner. You are the classic Norman Rockwellian farmer from Western Ohio. And so, you know, there's a lack of civility. There's a lack of decorum. The president basically said that Nancy Pelosi had a hard time thinking in one of her speeches because her teeth were falling out of her mouth. You're a classic Midwesterner. Do you find that reprehensible? Do you find that acceptable? I mean,
It's absolutely not acceptable.
Then how do you challenge it? Do you challenge it by going low like he does?
Absolutely not.
You go high? What do you say? I mean, that's how a loser talks. That's how a loser thinks.
As a, you know what, I don't care. I don't care what I'm called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just don't call me late for dinner. It doesn't make any difference. I left the Republican Party, by the way, and I'll answer it this way. I left the Republican Party 30 days ago.
So you're going to be running as
I'm
an independent.
Running as an independent.
So you're going to primary him? Can you primary him as an independent?
Don't need
so
to.
You have to.
Don't need to.
So will there be a Democrat in the race as well?
There
as
will
you?
Be.
So there'll be a three-way race.
It'll be a three-way race. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm the only one that has a pedigree to be in this district that can beat him as come from a conservative side. Okay. A Democrat, unfortunately, no matter what their qualifications are, can't win in the 4th District in Ohio. It just doesn't work. It's gerrymandered out.
Okay.
So let me answer your question this way. I left the Republican Party a month ago and became
a big deal.
It is a big deal, particularly when I was in leadership for so long.
Right, and
I labored over this.
Right.
Because and I explained the populism, and I'm not a populist. I explained that to you. It's just not me. But I've got a brand new grandson. He's 11 months old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I hope to have more. He's going to take over this farm, by the way. This is what I've worked for all this time, because farms in the United States are passed down through generations. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm first generation. We started this ourselves, and so it's been passed down. I've got an 11-month-old grandson, hope to have more. In 13 or 15 years, he, and I hope his sisters and cousins, come to me and they're going to say, Grandpa, what were you doing in X period? Because I don't know what this period's going to be called, but it's going to have a name, a moniker. The Great Depression.
The demagoguery of Trump.
Vietnam. The civil rights struggle. All of those, we have those in our head. We have them captured in our head because we know the surrounding facts of those. They were periods in our history that we can point to. Mm-hmm. And we moved through them and we got better. Mm-hmm. They're going to come to me and say, Grandpa, what were you doing during the Trump period? Okay, whatever it comes up. History will, nationalism. It will be captured. What were you doing, Grandpa?
Yep.
And I'm not going to say that I'm not going to say that I hid, that I sat idle in the fortress, that I threw bombs at my neighbors.
Right.
I'm going to say I stood up. Mm-hmm. I stood up for something. I stood up for something that was right. I stood up for diplomacy. I stood up for statesmanship. I stood up for American exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if I get my ass kicked, whatever. I stood up and I did something. And I had more guts than I see out of our Republican legislature right now.
Amen.
Because, you know what? I get it. Representatives should be a prism through which their people's views mm-hmm. shine through. Mm-hmm. Okay? I agree with that. But it can't be pure democracy. It can't be just because there's more of these people, we get the decision. You just can't put your finger in the air and test the wind.
Well, the founders
to lead. That's why it's a republic. It's not a democracy. Democracy is chaos. It's absolute chaos.
What they were trying to avoid was mob rule.
That's exactly right.
The reason why it's a republic is they're trying to protect the individual rights, and therefore minority voters, minorities as they're defined in civil liberties and et cetera, needed to have some representation and needed to have a voice.
That's why
when Elizabeth Warren talks about the elimination of the Electoral College, we have to fight her every step of the way, because that would not lead to any level of success
in
the country.
Montana, Utah, Wyoming, et cetera, would all become serfs.
No, they would
without
have to,
the Electoral
no,
College.
What would happen is they would be forced into merging and all this other. But look, I mean,
that's a mess.
But let me ask you a different question. So we're not sure if Trump is going to get knocked out of office or not. Let's say he probably isn't. That's the consensus. He's likely to be the nominee, although I still think there's an opportunity. If we had a couple of valorous people, I think they could knock him down. But let's say he's the nominee. And now we have a lesson from Corbynism in the United Kingdom. If the Democrats put up a hard left person, Trump will smite them. But let's say the Republicans put up a Joe Biden or a Mike Bloomberg. Do you think they could beat Trump in Ohio? You think they could beat Trump in Ohio?
It better be a moderate, at least. And they better not start out their stump speech with, under my administration, all fossil fuels are gone. Under my administration.
Well, it doesn't even make sense. Not even common sense,
But that's what Joe Biden did.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I mean, they're
you know, they're all forms of
Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, let me just take a look at him. Okay, I take a look at it. In the exact day, this is about 2 months ago. The exact day, I'm looking at his bio resume. You know, let me get on his webpage. The exact day, he stands up and he says, "Under my administration, fossil fuels are gone." Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what? I'm a farmer. I own like 25 engines.
Right.
Never happened.
Right. You know what I heard? I'm going to be regulated out of business. That's what I heard.
Right.
As a businessman.
Yeah, of course.
As a farmer.
Yeah.
As a Midwesterner.
Of course you heard that.
Right.
So, and the others that are farther to the left of him, they're not going to resonate in Ohio. There's no way they can resonate
in
Ohio.
Right, if he's not, then
because,
they definitely won't.
Because let me tell you what the pushback that I get the most when I'm critical of the president, and by the way, if you're critical of the president, again, there's no debate, you're a traitor.
Well, yeah, but you could be called an unstable nut job on his Twitter feed if you're critical.
I can only hope.
Yeah,
well, oh my God!
Yeah, trust me.
Well, would he please tweet me? If he would tweet my name,
he figured out that
really help you.
It'd be great.
Right.
Yeah, no, he figured out that the worst thing you do is tweet me.
Yeah.
You know, he tweeted at me a few times, and now he's like, okay, I better stop tweeting at him because you know I'm going to keep coming at him like a freight train. So so he doesn't want to elevate me. I get that. But let's go to these tariffs. Let's go to this war on trade.
It's a war on trade.
Okay, and so. You're a farmer. Tell me what happened here. The money that the president gave you, you received money from the president?
Right? Absolutely.
Okay, so the money that the president gave you, which was a larger bailout than the General Motors bailout, all caused by him, by the way, but the money that you received.
After net,
Is that making up for the demolition
of
the marketplace that he destroyed?
No, and not at all. And this is the MO of the administration is that they take a position. If they hurt someone along the way, they turn everything into cash, do a cash calculation, send you cash, and bing bang, you're supposed to be even.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way markets work. Listen, for your listeners, we've got to have a little bit of history here. Farmers built these trade relationships over three decades, starting back in the mid-70s. Okay, Earl Butz at the time was the Secretary of Agriculture, and he challenged agriculture to plant fence row to fence row, and challenged because we were going to have to feed the world. So farmers got busy, and by the late 1970s, as a farmer, you couldn't make a mistake. I mean, it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Then 1980 came. Jimmy Carter embargoed grain to the USSR because they invaded Afghanistan. And I'll roar through this story as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
They invaded Afghanistan in 1980, which shut down then our biggest customer, the USSR, at the time, and sparked the farm crisis of the 1980s, plus the fact that we were paying 21% interest at the time. I remember having a $100,000 loan out to put out crops in the early 80s in the organization I was involved in at that time, and we were paying 21% interest.
Oh, my God.
So by 1985, we had literally had grain running the streets in the United States. I was with hammer and nails and plywood and tubifores building temporary storage inside of garages and neighbors' barns just to keep grain off the market by 1985 because we couldn't sell it. So agriculture got busy. We got on planes, trains, and automobiles, and we went around the world. And we said, never again are we going to be in this position where the taxpayer had to come to our rescue in this kind of situation. So we started making trade deals. And NAFTA was a result of that. It came to fruition in mid-90s, 94.
Mm-hmm.
But our primary target at that time was Asia because the Chinese people were moving from a lower class to middle class. And every country on the planet, when you go from a lower class to middle class, you want to stop eating, I'll use a metaphor, I'll say rice. You want to stop eating rice, and you want to start getting your proteins from what? Meat.
Oh, meat.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to raise meat, and you're going to pay for that because you now have more disposable income, you need something to feed it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, pick us. Mm-hmm. We got a deal for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we started shipping grains into Asia. So agriculture built those markets, all right? And we were bringing money back to rural communities the old-fashioned way, not by the bucket load, not by the truck load. We were bringing money back by the boat load, all right, from China and Asian countries because we were selling grain, bringing dollars back, going directly to farmers, and farmers don't sit on their money. They get rid of it right away, and they take it where? To the rural communities, hardware store, new truck store, old truck store, fuel store, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so those markets are our markets. So what the president does is comes in, and in March of 2018, applies tariffs to all of our, not only China, but all of our existing trading partners, our existing good partners,
mm-hmm.
Japan, Australia, Mexico, Canada, et cetera, et cetera, the EU,
right.
The EU all the way down the road, and starts applying tariffs. So each one of them retaliates against agriculture, which is the United States' soft underbelly, retaliates against us. Now our products are priced out of the market in their country. So let me tell you about agriculture and trade. 50% of agriculture products, generally, corn and soybeans, I'm talking about what we call row crops. 50% of soybeans, for sure, are shipped overseas. Okay? Business plan for agriculture, marketing plan, fits on a postcard, fits on the back of a business card, mm-hmm. trade. It's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we do. It's what makes rural communities thrive. Is trade, and now that's adversely affected in a big way. So the president does a calculation and says, okay, we'll just pay you off. I call it hush money.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pay you off, and bing, bang, we're done. Just wait. We're going to be good, okay? I got all these trick plays. We're going to have more trade, and we continue to be promise, and we haven't had anything come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
So his strategy failed.
So far. Now, we got the USMCA, thanks to Nancy Pelosi, for God's sakes, mm-hmm. to get that across the finish, which looks like it's going to be voted on. We'll see. But China, we don't have that resolved yet. All right? We got a phase one deal, we hear, but we don't know. Let me give you like a football analogy of the way this thing goes. Agriculture, we'll call them the ag team, we spend most all our time inside the red zone of the opposing team, which is all of these other countries, all right? And what's the points on the board? It's called trade surplus. Agriculture's always enjoyed as trade surplus. So we're spending a lot of time inside the red zone. Yeah, we get pushed back, okay, but then we score, and we're always ahead. We get this brand-new quarterback. He comes in. He's got a lot of promise. He's got big hands and all that implies. So he takes the ball, and the first thing he does is he runs it backwards 80 yards, and he puts it on the one-yard line. Everybody's aghast. What am I going to do? Oh, no, I got all these trick plays. I got to have plenty of room to run. Okay, fine. So he gets under center. He throws a 15-yard screen pass. Then he goes 3 yards up the middle in a cloud of dust like my alma mater, Woody Hayes football. And he jumps up, and he wants the Most Valuable Player award. And I come running down out of the stands, and I grab any microphone that anybody will give me, CNN, CNBC, whatever, and I say, no, you're not going to get Most Valuable Player. You're not going to get an award until your butts clear back up to the 20-yard line where we started. And then we're not going to talk about awards. We're going to talk about you maybe keeping your job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where agriculture is on trade. Because we're so far behind.
Do you think these farmers will support them in the coming election?
That is so tenuous. Farmers have stuck with the president because he keeps promising all of these grand trade deals. And he's tapped into their internal biases that they've been treated. They've been treated poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He uses I call them subjective descriptors. That's what I call it. Subjective descriptors. We've been cheated. We've been run over. We look
ignored.
Stupid. We've
right.
been ignored. All of those things that are not measurable, but when an individual hears them, again, back to confirmation bias, mm-hmm. it confirms their internal biases that, yeah, we must have been cheated.
Right, so basically he's playing everybody.
The president says we were cheated, so apparently we're cheated.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmers have been sticking with them. But I'm going to tell you where his Achilles heel is. It's farm wives.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes like this. Now, far be it for me to explain the difference between men and women here, but I'll give it a whirl, so wear your seatbelt. How men and women are wired. A farmer says he's going to continue to support Trump. Generally, they're probably talking to the guy because, as a rule, it's probably the operator.
Well,
that's
what the polling says.
Probably the male. Okay. Men are very monofocused. All right. You know, they got to plant corn. They got to haul beans. They got to feed the cattle. Whatever. They're very poor. Stick with me here. Mm-hmm. They're very poor about watching their flank, and they do not watch their rear.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Women, on the other hand, are in a 360-degree radar all the time. They can see things from 360-degree perspective. You don't believe me? Think of your mom. How in the hell did she know what I was doing? She must have had eyes in the back of her head. Mm-hmm. When a farm wife looks out over the horizon, she wants to see three things: predictability, consistency, and no storm clouds. All right? The administration's failed in all three. Because what she's worried about is passing that farm down through the generations. She's worried about her kids to be able to go to college and have enough dollars to be generated. She's worried about making sure those kids get that farm. She's worried about maintaining that for multiple generations down the way. Mm-hmm. And she's probably over a 60% chance that she controls the books. She also sees her husband walking the halls at 2:30 at night, not knowing where their income's going to be, and watching their income fall and not having a market because these markets are lost. Mm-hmm. So here's my prediction. You're not going to hear her in front of CNN. You're not going to hear her grabbing the microphone. You're not going to hear her complain. But when she gets in the ballot box, mm-hmm. she's going to take her pen and she's going to use it like a samurai sword. And she's going to start with the administration and all the downstream people, and she's going to cut them into sushi bits.
Right, well, that's encouraging. I mean, we could potentially end the podcast right there.
Do I speak the truth?
We do, actually. Yeah.
Do I speak
the truth? I couldn't have said it any
better. I'll tell you what. Don't be telling me how men and women are wired.
You actually had it really spot on there. That's the same.
So we have to wrap up, but I have to ask you one last question, if you don't mind. I want you to take your farming hat off for a second and just put your American hat on and your life experience in America and all the greatness of America. Is this going well under President Trump, or has this been a national nightmare for the American people?
This is not going well. We are better than this.
Don't you think?
We are better than this.
Right.
The framers knew there would be discourse. But in my view, I tell you what, I want to see chairs thrown. I want to insults. I don't care. But it needs to be on the floor of the House and in the swell of the Senate. It can't be coming from the top, coming from the office of the president, and lowering the presidency to be able to attack individuals and to believe that that's what America stands for. And I'll end it with trade. When Air Force One comes flying into another country, okay, that's a big deal. The United States of America, it gives me goosebumps mm-hmm. to see it. We're no longer revered in the world. We're tolerated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
You know what we are?
Despicable.
We're the crazy uncle mm-hmm. at Thanksgiving where you got to invite him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We're tolerated.
Yeah.
I hate that we're tolerated. We're better than that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
We're the United States of America.
Right. All right. Well, I think we should leave it on that.
I have goosebumps.
You are phenomenal, and I wish you the best of success in everything you're doing.
Thanks for being here. This is really
amazing. A very happy New Year to everybody out there. Hopefully, you're out there celebrating this evening, and we wish you a very, very happy New Year.
Yeah, hopefully 2020 brings some good.
And hopefully 2020 be good for all of us.
Some good stuff to our country.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.